For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, well, well. Football season is here. Does that mean that the return of the Footballin' podcast with Spencer and...
Ben and Spence.
Ben and Spence is coming back?
Or? Yeah, I'm sure it has to for another year.
All right, Footballin' with Ben and Spence. But of course, before we get to Footballin' with Ben and Spence, we've got one of our favorite guys and one of the hardest working men in journalism. That would be Chris Peek from Panther Lair. He does an incredible job of covering your Panthers, who start camp next week. And Chris, I was just thinking about the old times when you and I were on the beat together covering Pitt, because I looked out into the hallway and who was walking down the hallway? EJ Borghetti.
Wow. Wow. You got the celebrities in the house, Paul.
Yes. So I was thinking of the times when he scolded us for reporting on things like the apparatuses that guys were wearing while they were out sitting out of practice. Do you remember? Do you remember those days?
I often think of those days when I see all the fan produced videos, not fan as in the radio station, but lowercase f fan produced videos from Steelers training camp. It's like, how can they ever possibly imagine to win a game when fans are sitting there with their cell phones taking video of it? They're going to go 0-17. It's going to be, I mean, like, they have no chance this year. I can't believe they allow fans to, cross such boundaries by taking video of their practice. It's unbelievable.
Yes. Speak of the devil, now I look back into the studio, and there he is. EJ Borghetti standing right back there, right? I mean, he's, EJ, why don't you come on the mic and talk with, here we go. Come on. We got him. Chris,
no.
This is a bonus Come on.
Well.
Here we go. Give me 1 second. Somebody wants to say hello to you. Here you go, EJ. Someone wants to say hello. Say hello to Chris Peek.
Chris Peek, we got the band back together, my man.
Is this happening live on radio, EJ? Are we actually live?
Oh, yes.
Are we counting down from the break? Are we coming back from break in 20?
No, this is completely live and appropriate time to drop.
That's right. It's another Paul Pause. Paul will
What's
now silently research statistics during
We're
our
waiting
live
for you to give
show.
EJ some headphones.
Oh, there we go. You got it. You got the headphones, EJ. Let's go.
This is great. Right. This is good.
Chris, it's an honor. I'm just getting this wave of nostalgia and this romantic feel for the past that you, Paul Zeiss, and I are reunited together. I feel like we're flush back in circa 2008 and just having a great time.
Back in the good old days of 2008, it was fun back then. You know, it was fun back then.
Well, Chris, I think it's always been fun. It's a different kind of, one's fun evolves, does it not? I mean, we were all younger men, unattached, and now we're, you and I are married, fathers, going to Little League Baseball, and... But it hasn't. I've always greatly appreciated you, man, personally and professionally. What? I have particularly always loved your comprehensive coverage of the Panthers. You just do it so very, very well. And it is an honor to work with you. But you know what I enjoy the most? I always enjoy your jokes at my expense.
I'm trying to keep them off the air right now. I've got a lot that I can make, but we're on Paul's show. We're not trying to take over his show, so I'll hold it back.
Him and I were. I mean, Chris and I were just talking about when you scolded us for reporting on the apparatus that people were wearing on their ankles or their wrists.
Well, let me say, here's one truism that hasn't changed: injuries are not to be reported.
That's true. It's very true.
Well, Chris, let me give you this little preview.
Okay.
I will be hitting you up with a media camp memo on Monday morning. It is reaching its finality. The party will get started on Wednesday, the 31st, beginning with a 9 a.m. photo window. for you to shutterbug away. And then Coach Narduzzi will be kicking us off with a 1 p.m. press conference coming at you live from South Water Street, talking all things Panthers. So looking forward to being back in your regular company. Always good to be with Mr. Zeiss. I think it's going to be a really fun, compelling, exciting year of Pitt football, and looking forward to a great August to get it all started. And again, your coverage has just been tremendous now. Going on, Chris, this is hard to believe. You've almost been on this beat for two decades, man. How about
that? Almost 20 years, yeah. I started when Wani started, and so I outlasted him, I guess. Yep. So,
The only guy that's been in the building longer, too, EJ and Chris LaSala. That's pretty much it.
That's right. Yo, Chris LaSala started like a month before me. So, but you know what the funny thing is? Chris LaSala looks the same. And sadly, I do not look the same.
I don't know what his trick is. I mean, I was going to make a joke earlier about how there's a few more gray hairs, but the reality is for some of us, there's a few, like, just fewer hairs, except for Chris. He's still got a full head of hair. It's all dark. I mean, I don't know how he stays young working the profession he does with the colleagues he has. I'm not sure how he pulls it off, but he's a
true glue guy. I mean, when you talk about the finest and the very best in their business, I mean, Chris LaSala is it. And if I'm still on the chairing the committee whenever that time comes, he's going to be in the Hall of Fame by my vote. I will nominate him and vote him top of my top 10 list for sure. He's a Hall of Fame person and professional, and keeps it all together.
Well, yeah, he's a wonderful man. And EJ, you're a wonderful man. I thank you for jumping on the air. It's out of your comfort zone.
Yeah, exactly. I didn't come prepared for this.
It's out of your comfort zone, but you can always, you know, like I said, cherish the memories of you and I and Chris in Birmingham.
You know what this is in football parlance.
Watching some of the greatest performances in bowl history.
Well, you
at the Birmingham Bowl.
You know what you gave me in football parlance? This was the equivalent of a sudden change. Yeah. Right. We had a turnover in minus territory, so I had to come running in here, but. You know, the Birmingham, I would say this, if it weren't for you and it weren't for Chris, I don't know. I can look back at Birmingham and actually smile because of you two guys.
Right.
And the stirring win over Kentucky that one year. But
that one year. Yeah. Who did they had somebody who went on to the NFL. It wasn't Jamison Crowder. He went to Duke, right? Who was the guy they had that ended? Was it Randall Cobb?
It was.
Was Randall Cobb on Kentucky team?
Yes, he was.
That's right. For some reason, I always confuse Crowder and Cobb. I'm not sure why. They're sort of the same guy in my mind. But, yeah, so we got to see a future pro in that game.
We got to see – I don't know, Chris, were you in the building for the 3-0 game? I know.
I was not. I was watching at home.
Yes. I was there for that wonderful 3-0 game, EJ. That was wonderful. You and I were – you were in the building with me for the DJ Hernandez game up in Connecticut, weren't you?
I did not travel for that. I was not going on the road yet. So I missed all the – I mean, I was there for some classic moments in 2008 and 2010. You know, I was there when the Bearcat got arrested at Cincinnati in 2010. I was there for the disaster at Connecticut in 2010. That was a real and the disaster at Connecticut in 2012. So I didn't see all the disasters at Connecticut, 04 or 06, but I got 10 and 12. So I got my fill of, like, terrible Pitt games at UConn.
Let me just tell you something. That was my least favorite venue.
UConn?
Rentschler Field.
Rentschler. Yeah.
You went up there. And it started with the fact that you had those two fat, obnoxious stat guys that just had to give you commentary the entire game in the press boxes. Do you remember those two guys? I wanted to say, shut the hell up. Anyway.
You know what? I would rather, if we're going to go down memory lane, I want to go down memory lane on the stuff that's really fun. For example, 2004, under the Golden
Bear. Yes.
That was one of, truly, when I think about some of the best games that I've had a front row seat for, the Tyler Palko 5-touchdown game that really propelled us down the second half of the season to get to the Fiesta Bowl. That was outstanding. That team is going to be celebrating its 20th anniversary this year. I don't think I'm letting anything out of the bag.
No.
But that team did, you know, claim a Big East title and earn the BCS berth to go out to Phoenix. And I know a lot of people want to focus on the result that happened at the Fiesta Bowl. But I really, when I think back, that season, I cannot help. And that was a dramatic season.
Well,
you know, back in the day, Paul, I would call you because your deadline was at 11 o'clock.
Yeah.
And I would call you, again, young guys.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Unmarried, no kids. I would call you like at 11:05. I'm like, all right, tell me what you got, right? What are you reporting for the next day? Because there was always drama with, in terms of our leadership change, who the next head coach was and so forth. But I will always look back on that 04 season, not the most talented bunch, but I'm going to tell you something. I'd want to be in a foxhole with those guys. I'd want to be in a corporate boardroom with those guys. Really made that year fun.
You know what win really propelled them too was the win over Engel Martin. Remember they came back against whoever that was early that year?
And that's right. Like,
and we were walking out. EJ and I were walking out, and he said, I have no idea what to make of what I just saw because Pitt was way down. And I said, I'm going to tell you this much right now.
Furman.
This group learned how to win.
That's right. Here's another one. Being at Temple, at the Link, when entered the fourth quarter down double digits, and Tyler led a comeback, and that really propelled us.
Let's not talk about that game.
Oh, I got it.
Hey. But anyway, the other part of it is that 2000, the Notre Dame game, how do we let EJ get off the hook without what happened after the Notre Dame game on national TV?
I can only smile. Again, I look back on it, I can only smile. It really added to the folklore, right?
Here's the thing I'll tell you, though. We also got to cover Larry Fitz in a Heisman run. We also got to cover Darrell Revis, who was, one of the best corners ever. We also got to cover Aaron Donald, who's one of the best defensive linemen ever. We got to cover a lot of highs as well as the lows.
We had a lot of great moments.
Absolutely.
And you guys made it all the worthwhile. But I do want to mention about that Fiesta Bowl team. They are going to be honored. Their 20th anniversary. We're bringing them back, I believe, for the Cal game. So that's going to be exciting. Coach Harris is going to be back. Cash from that team. So there's a lot to look forward to both on and off the field this year. And Chris, it sounds like your dog needs to be let out.
That's not my dog. It's another dog in the neighborhood. I'm sitting outside. So I don't know if the audio could pick that up.
So basically, EJ, thank you for joining us.
But an honor. Thank
I will
you.
Say this. In the sign of modern college football times, you will be honoring the team that won the Big East title as members of the ACC, playing against a Pac-12 team that is now an ACC team.
You know, I wouldn't want it any other way.
Wouldn't want it any other way, right? All right, EJ.
Paul, thank you. Chris, I'll talk to you soon, man. Looking forward to seeing you next week.
All right, see you, Jeff.
Chris, let's talk Pitt real quick. now that we've went down memory lane with Mr. EJ. Every year going into the year, there's always a storyline or two. I'm assuming there are a few that we should follow. What do we have with Pitt camp opening and starting? What are we looking for?
Yeah, it's all about the offense. I mean, when you look at the changeover from Frank Cignetti to Cade Bell, I mean, this is the most sort of drastic and maybe even desperate move that Pat Narduzzi's made in 10 years at Pitt. This hire is huge, and you could say a lot of his career and maybe legacy is riding on it. He's got to get this one right, and he went way off the reservation for it. I mean, he called it out of the box, and I think it absolutely is. I mean, you've watched Pitt for the last 9 years. They've never had an offense that tries to do what this one's going to try to do with the tempo and getting the ball out, the way they're going to operate. I mean, they haven't had anything like this, and it seems to run contrary to everything Pat Narduzzi believes about football, and so – it's like, what's the biggest storyline about Pitt this year? It's, will this new offense work? And there's a lot of things that go into it, but it really boils down to that question, because they went 3-9 last year because the offense didn't work. And there were a lot of reasons why the offense didn't work, but that's why they went 3-9. So if they can improve on 3-9, it's going to be because this offense is at least a little bit better. That remains to be seen.
Well, I think, a couple of people that I know that are big Pitt fans, I said, so we should call this High Octane Football the sequel. And, of course, that didn't go over very well with them.
I'm not surprised. I don't remember. I mean, like, they used tempo that year, but they snapped it fast, but I don't think it's going to be as fast as – or I don't think it was as fast as what this year's offense is aiming to be. Like, Cade Bell has talked about trying to do, like, the Tennessee, Josh Heupel – UCF thing every 12 to 15 seconds, which, who knows, once they get into the season, they might decide, that's not actually that good of an idea for a lot of reasons. That's going to be the goal. I don't know if he's talked quite as big a game as Todd Graham talked. I mean, you remember Todd Graham was like, we're going to have four passes of 40 yards per game. You know, we're going to have score 40 points per game and all this different stuff. And their offense was pretty bad. I mean, for a lot of reasons, not the least of which was the quarterback. You know, I don't know if, you know, Cade Bell, he's got his own set of cliches. What is it? Play fast, score faster, and all this different stuff. I mean, we'll see. You and I have been around long enough to know. You hear these coaches talk all their big game, and it's like, all right, well, actually, what are you going to do in the game? Like, what are you going to do against West Virginia in week three? What are you going to do at Cincinnati in week two? What are you going to do once you get into the ACC schedule? Is that really going to work? And, I mean, it obviously didn't work in 2011. I don't know if it's going to, you know, we'll see if it works this year.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that's the thing is the other part of it is all of those kinds of offenses really are predicated on having a quarterback that knows what to do. So the question is, I guess Nate Yarnell is the guy that's first up. Will he be the starter, and is he going to be able to, you know, play that kind of football?
Yeah, I think he's going to hold on to that starting job. Eli Holstein, I think, pushed him a little bit in the spring, the transfer from Alabama. But I think Yarnell will hold on to it and be the starter this year. And the thing about Nate Yarnell, I mean, we've only seen him here and there. He's made like three starts. One of them was the Western Michigan game 2 years ago where he literally attempted 12 passes. So I don't know what you take from that. The last two games of the year last year when he finally moved into the starting lineup, I think he was pretty good. He only threw one interception in those two games. I think if you take his stats from those two games and projected over a 13-game schedule, he throws for like 3,000 yards, 20 touchdowns, and 7 interceptions. Well, you take that. I think that's a really good year. You know, you'd like a few more touchdowns, but 3,000 yards, 20 and 7, yeah, you take that. I think the key with him is that it's the efficiency. I think he made good decisions when he's gotten the opportunity in the past. He hasn't really put the ball in jeopardy, hasn't had too many mistakes. Like I say, he had one interception. It should have been probably could have had a flag for pass interference or defensive holding. So he's done a good job taking care of the ball. And I'm sort of the mind, Paul, that like the quarterback play was so bad last year. I mean, it was just such an abject disaster for the first 10 games. I mean, each of those guys, Dracovic and Vayer, went 1-4 as starters. Like, you only need to be a little bit better and the team should win 6, 7, 8 games pretty handily. And by a little bit better, I mean, like, don't have as many turnovers as Christian Vayer did. And like show an ability to complete a forward pass, which Phil Dracovic really never was able to do. And I think Nate Yarnell can do that. I think he'll protect the football. I think he can take what's there. And so if Cade Bell is all he's cracked up to be, as far as designing a scheme that gets guys open, I think Nate Yarnell will be able to complete the passes. He'll find those open receivers and get them the ball. So if the scheme is actually as good as we're told it is, or as good as it's supposed to be, then I think they'll be all right. And they might not go average 41 points per game or something, but I think they'll be a lot better than they were last year and win a bunch more games than they won last year.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I know that they lost some big names on defense and, you know, lost even a couple of guys to the transfer portal and everything else. So my question is, you know, what's their defense going to be like?
I think for a lot of people, we're just sort of at a point of kind of trusting them, particularly when it comes to the secondary. I mean, they have to replace all the corners. Everybody who started a game at cornerback over the last 2 years is gone. Everybody who played the bulk of the snaps at cornerback over the last 2 years is gone. So it's going to be a new group. But we've touted their defensive back recruiting for a long time, and I think this is a year where it's going to have to show up. I think their linebackers are really good. They have some young players, but I think they're really talented. I think the safety might be the deepest and most talented position on this team. I think those guys are going to be really good. The big question's up front. I think they took a pretty big step back last year along the defensive line. And, you know, personnel-wise, it doesn't really look like they got all that. Deion Hayes transferred to Colorado. DeAndre Jules went to South Carolina. Sam Okungwola went to Colorado. All those, you know, Devin Danielson and David Green and Tyler Bentley, they're all, like, in their 30s now. You know, I mean, they've all, like, moved on with their life's work. So you've got a whole new group of guys, some transfers, some freshmen, some returning guys who haven't played much. I don't know what that group's going to do, but we've seen how important the defensive line is in previous years. Those guys have some big shoes to step into and just some big roles to fill. I think overall the defense will be okay, provided the offense does better than like 22 points per game or something like that. They have a lot of open jobs on defense, but it's just hard to get past the offense. It's just going to come down to whether or not they can be, you know, decent or above average on offense.
50-minute mark on the Fan, brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram, Route 19 in Peters Township, celebrating 50 years in the South Hills. Also, it's a Chevy summer drive. It's on Chevy up to $7,500 in rebates. Terms and conditions at sunchevy.com. It'll be a high of 83 today. Chris, I'll let you go on this last question. You look at the ACC and how it's changing, and now we have another, rendition of what it's going to look like, which includes, if I'm not mistaken, is Cal and SMU coming here, or is Pitt going to SMU? I forget. I haven't looked at the schedule, but
Pitt goes to SMU.
Yeah. So I think, for a team like Pitt, that's got a fan base, obviously, that's, immersed in the middle of a professional market and everything else, and, has a lot of competition. Is this helping Pitt when you start adding a bunch of teams and when you start looking at the conference as a whole? I mean, how many casual fans are going to care about Pitt playing Cal?
I mean, how many care about Pitt playing Boston College?
Well,
I get your point. I mean, Pat Narduzzi almost kind of likened it to like a non-conference game, which is probably what it's going to feel like. It's just going to happen to be a non-conference game that'll count in your standings. I mean, you and I know this fan base well enough to know, like, they will pack the stadium for West Virginia. It's going to be an awesome atmosphere. It'll be a great day at the stadium for that game. The rest of the home games will be, average or below average attendance, unless they really win a lot. And even then, you're not going to get, packed stadiums. And so, the diehards who are always there will always be there. The casuals who tune in when Pitt wins will tune in if Pitt wins. I don't think it moves the needle much for the fan base to add Cal and Stanford and SMU to the conference, to add, Cal and SMU to the schedule this year. Maybe it gives them some more opportunities to go recruit, maybe in Texas. I don't think they're going to dig into California all that much. And I think sometimes that whole element gets overblown anyway of, well, you're going to play SMU twice every 3 years, so you got to go get some Texas guys. I don't know if that's actually going to pan out. It always comes down to winning with this program. They need to win games. They need to be good in order to be relevant. They need to win games in order to be relevant. And if they don't win games, they're not going to carry that relevance locally, regardless of who they're playing, unless it's West Virginia, Penn State, or Notre Dame. That's been the case for the past 25 years, probably more. And it's probably going to keep being the case for the next 25 years unless they end up in a conference with more marquee opponents. If they get into the Big Ten with Ohio State and Michigan and Penn State, or if they get into the SEC and they've got Alabama coming to town or something like that, otherwise it's those main rivals that will draw the crowds, and the rest will be largely dependent, as it always has been, on the wins.
Chris, thank you so much, sir.
All right, Paul. Thanks.
And we will do it again soon sometime. Enjoy your Monday with EJ.
Thanks, Paul. I'll see you.
All right. It's Chris P. Coming up, we got Bob Watkins, 93.7 The Fan.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.